Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, a musical about travelers stranded in a special Canadian town after 9/11. Then a local band brings their own special indie rock and electronica sound. And the lead singer is my KLW coworker. And two Filipino nurses who were wrongly convicted of lethal crimes in the 1970s inspire a dance production about generational trauma and injustices in the justice system. Today's theme, we're rocking and rolling through history. That's all coming up. Stay with us. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. In the summer of 1975, patients at the VA hospital in Ann Arbor, Michigan, were oddly experiencing respiratory failures, and some people died. The hospital's chief anesthesiologist discovered that the patients' IVs had been poisoned with a paralyzing muscle relaxant. Two ICU nurses were wrongly accused of the crime. Their names were Leonora Perez, or Perez, and Filipina Narciso. Both nurses were immigrants from the Philippines. Murder charges were dropped, but the nurses were convicted and imprisoned for poisoning. In 1977, a federal judge overturned the jury's ruling, saying that the prosecution's quote-unquote persistent misconduct led to, again, quote-unquote overwhelming prejudice to the defendants. And this story is the inspiration behind the new dance production, Burden of Proof, and it opens this Friday at Bindlestiff Studio in San Francisco. And joining me is the show's director and choreographer, legendary choreographer, Aleluya Panis. Hello, Aleluya.
Hello, happy to be here and to see you.
Yeah, so glad to see you too as well. I think it's been 7 years since the last time I interviewed you, so it has been a while.
Okay.
So it's good to see you again. And wow, this is really just such a, wow, just a big story, a tragic story. And I just want to read a little data. So the data varies on the number of people who were injured and died at the hospital. But Aleluya, I was reading a 1977 article from the New York Times and reported that 51 to 63 patients at the hospital had suffered respiratory failure and 13 people died. Somebody gave them Pavulon, I guess that's how you pronounce it, Pavulon, which is a synthetic from plant-derived toxins used by indigenous people in South America to make poison darts. And Aleluya, I recently read on the Michigan Bar's website that the federal prosecutors provided weak evidence during that trial. They couldn't prove the nurses had a motive, and so the judge ordered a new trial, but the feds never pursued a new case. Tell us when you first learned of this case, and what were your thoughts?
I met Jason Magabo Perez in 2009, I believe.
And who is he?
Jason Magabo Perez is the son of Leonora Perez, who was the Poet Laureate of San Diego in 2024-25. Mm-hmm. He was still a student at the here in San Francisco, was getting his master's. And he was introduced to me by a colleague saying that, hey, you know, Jason has this new play that he's interested in working on. It's not really a play. It's like a hybrid of multidisciplinary about this very story. Mm-hmm. And so I was a director in 2011 of this particular play or theater piece. And so that's how I was introduced and got really immersed into the story of his family.
Okay. And I went to college with Jason.
Yes,
yeah.
I heard.
Yeah. He's a little younger than me, but we were both at UC San Diego at the same time. So I was really surprised when I saw that his name popped up and that his mother was Leonora. And how do you pronounce the other nurse's name? Is it Filipina Narciso?
It's Filipina Narciso, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so they were in their early 30s when they were on trial and sent to prison. And are they still alive today?
Filipina's just passed away, I think, last year.
Oh, okay.
And Jason's mother, Leonora, is 81, and she's actually coming to the show next Friday. So not this coming Friday, but the following Friday.
Okay.
So we're really excited about that. for her to see it.
Wow. Okay. Oh, wow. That's wonderful. So what was, you know, again, you know, there was racial prejudice in this trial. I've read so many different articles over the,
right.
And they're saying different things. So what were some of the, just from your research and maybe what Jason told you, what were some of the racism that the nurses experienced during the trial? Because I'm thinking language issues, xenophobia.
Well, you know, that was in the 70s, and unfortunately, it's allowed again for people to just blurt out whatever they, you know, they want to blurt out, mm-hmm. incorrectly. And, you know, like that in the transcripts of the trial, they're all actually, you know, really racist remarks by the witnesses, you know, calling them slant eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were also... not really, because they were Asian. They just had a general kind of like Asian feel, but I'm sure that if they lined up with other Asian women, they probably wouldn't be able to identify them. And the people were, you know, it was at night, and so they couldn't really tell. But from what I understood, there were already all these deaths happening, and the FBI had to find, you know, the killer. And so they were the newest nurses. They've been there for 2 years. And they did know each other in the Philippines. They just met at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the scapegoat. And so I think one of the, what I think is probably a big mistake of their attorney or their lawyer did, is that they had them speak, you know, for themselves, you know, and they don't really know the language. But I fully understand why they do that. You know, they feel like they're professionals, they know English, they can speak for themselves. But, you know, the cultural aspect of English is very different from, you know, from what they know, school English. And so I'm sure that in front of, you know, of an attorney that's going to barrage them, you know, prosecutor, it was probably very, very tough. I think what's beautiful about the story is that the community, that means the larger community, not just the Filipino community, but the community in general, actually came together to support them and mm-hmm. to raise the funds so that they could get their attorneys, you know, our better attorneys for the appeal. So I think that there was a lot of support, you know, like from different segments of the community, you know, all races that believe in the justice, the injustice being done to these women. My interest with Jay was just like, why did y'all stay in the U.S.? You could have gone back to the Philippines and just forget about this. And that lingered in my mind mm-hmm. to, you know, until we actually had this project, until I started, I asked Jay in 2023, hey, you think we can do this project based on your family history? And would you be, of course, and would you be a collaborator in it?
Yeah.
And so I feel really honored that, you know, he feels like safe enough to allow me, and, you know, of course, is also a collaborator, to create this dance theater. And I did tell him that I'm not going to do the historical biographical story of your family. We're going to create a fictional story, but many of the details are the same, partly because we need to reimagine, right, what could have. And also how, you know, these things, you know, the judgment is really, it really stays not just with the defendant, but also the rest of the family.
Right.
And really, I'm so interested in trying to explore how they navigated this trauma.
Right. And these generational trauma.
Yes, it defines them to this very day.
So yeah, you know, you talk about incarceration and the women, they were locked up for a year, right?
I'm not really sure how long they were locked up, but I know that she was pregnant when it happened.
Really?
She was pregnant with her second son,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm I One of the other things too that I was really that was really important to me is that I'm not going to push Jason and his family to tell me more. That I will I have to allow for them to share what they want to share.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I didn't push for them to, oh, I want to talk to your mom. I want to talk to your dad. No, no, no. It's like, what is it that you want to offer to make this peace happen?
Yeah.
I did ask him if we could use, if we could draw from his mother's diary.
Yeah.
And he did yes.
Okay, hold that thought, because I definitely had a question about that. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Aleluya Baniz. She's the director and choreographer of the production Burden of Proof, and it's a multimedia dance performance that's inspired by the true story of two Filipino nurses who were wrongly convicted of poisoning patients at a Michigan VA hospital in 1975. Burden of Proof opens this Friday and runs until April 26th at Bindlestiff Studio in San Francisco. Aleluya, I've been keeping a journal since I was 7 years old. And so I was thinking, I said, that's some serious trust for me to give you up some pages of my journal and say, put it on stage and interpret it. How did that conversation go as far as having access to the information from her journal? And did Miss Leonora, did she write these when she was incarcerated, or has she gotten out of prison?
She wrote her diary, I think, throughout those years. Jason actually created a little documentary, an interview of her. And so it's from that interview that she's reading her pages from her diary that it wasn't the actual diary that that was shared with me. Mm-hmm. And again, this is out of respect for what is it that they want to share. So we basically... I've watched this documentary since 2011 when we were doing the play. And so it's already quite public. So there's nothing that is not public to this day that we've included in the piece.
Okay, got it. And Leonora Perez and Filipina Narciso, they continue nursing, right? They continue working
they
as
sure
nurses
did.
After that.
They sure did.
After all of that. And I also, too, want to mention that Jason Perez is a professor of ethnic studies at Cal State University, San Marcos. So and he's a fabulous poet. Again, like you said, he was a former San Diego Poet Laureate. And I'm thinking, too, of just you bringing your gift of dance and choreography and he bringing his gift of poetry. I can't even imagine.
And we also have Raph Salazar doing illustration so there's media as included to enrich even more and kind of express the scope of, you know, of this story. So we're just really feeling honored that, you know, they're allowing us to hold this story and to, you know, to let people know that this is that these things do happen, but there is also, like as I say, light at the end of the tunnel, right?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the I hate to say resilience because that's what they always tell us. You're so resilient, but you know that kind of like courage to keep on keeping on, and the great belief in themselves. Mm-hmm. And as you know, Jason told me that. His mother was always afraid whenever she, you know, I had applied for another job or she gets a, you know, like a review of her job or whether that everything is going to come up again. And it's so interesting that an unfortunate, and nowadays it's again the immigrants that are being, you know, scapegoated.
You know, you're using dance. And it's multimedia too in poetry, but I'm talking to you as a dancer, that you're using dance to tell a story of confinement. And not just in the prison, you know, but just even to confinement for immigrants outside of prison. Right now, I'm looking at this what's happening in the country. There are immigrants feeling confined and they may be at home because it's not safe to walk outside their doors. What does it mean for you to use dance to tell the story of being confined?
This is a very, very difficult story. And you must have heard that Jason tried to write the great American novel for his master's, and he couldn't do it. And so for his PhD, he wrote why he couldn't do it, why the words was not enough. And so I think dance movement is a way of placing the trauma away from ourselves, to kind of just see it in a, you know, a separate from us. And it makes it a little bit more, what is it? We can look at it better, you know, and accept it. And hopefully what we hope for is that people can see, you know, beyond. Because if we're not going to talk about it, if we're unable to discuss it, we're unable to look at it, the solution is nowhere. And so, you know, if we're denying it. So I think it's a beautiful device, you know, in ways of using the arts and dance and movement in particular, to engage in these really difficult subjects that we face.
Hallelujah. Wow, really just powerful story. Yeah. Thank you so much. I can only imagine what it's going to look like on a stage. And I'm thinking, too, just the mix of poetry and everything. It'll be beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hallelujah Panis is the director and choreographer of the production Burden of Proof. The show opens this Friday at Bindle Stiff Studio in San Francisco and runs until April 26th. Coming up, by day he's an announcer on KALW. By night he sings in a rock band. What? We are going to rock it out with my next guest. And he's already cracking me up. He hasn't even opened his mouth yet. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sound Show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. And that music you're hearing is from the local band Electric X. The three band members create music that is a blend of indie rock, electronica, new wave, and other genres. And their new album is called Analog Therapy. And I'm all about that because I'm Gen X. And it was recorded live in studio. Tariq Ansari is the lead vocalist of Electric X, and he does synthesizers or synths. And if his name sounds familiar, you probably heard him tell you the weather and what time it is. And yes, that's because he is one of KLW's announcers. But today, he's a rock star. Tariq Ansari is here. Welcome, Tariq.
Janae, what is up? Good to be with you.
It's good to be with you, too. I can't believe it. I've been working with someone who is by night a rock singer.
I mean, by day, too. Some days.
That is true.
Sometimes by night, I'm an announcer, and by day, I'm a singer.
That is true. You are always a rock star, Tar. You're always a rock star here. Okay, so you're part of this band, Electronic X, which includes your bandmates. Is it Benham the Venom, Barabati?
Yes.
Okay, and Benham?
Yes, Benham the Venom, Barabati, yeah.
Okay, that's the name. The name got a beat to it. All right, so he's on drums. Mark Hernandez is on bass. And you, Tark.
Yes.
Are on vocals. Okay, so how did y'all get together? Yeah. How did y'all form this band? Tell us.
Yeah, it was weird. It was before I even moved to San Francisco. I saw a Craigslist advert that said, hey, I like music. I'm not great at it, but if you're like me, let's all get in a room and find out what we play. And I was a gentleman named Trevor. We all got into a room, and then I just got on the keyboards and went, ah, da, 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 da. And they're like, okay, you're the singer. I'm like,
because
I've never done it before. That was it. And then Mark just started playing some bass, even though he usually plays guitar. A few other guys were like, we're not into this. And they just didn't come back next time. And then a year later, Benham, we were looking for a drummer. Benham came along, and that's how we became a band. It just happened very organically. And over time, we just started feeling things out together.
And you guys been together since 2021?
Yeah, 2021, summer of 2021, when I moved out to the city.
That's when the magic happened. Okay, so I want to read something from the band's webpage, which made me, it brought a smile to my face. It says, Benham is constantly, this is a quote, Benham is constantly banging away at the drums with the kind of rhythm that you wish you had. And he is accompanied by Mark, by Mark Hernandez, who fills out the sound with his electric bass and lead guitar. It doesn't matter. It's awesome. But we must also mention singer Tariq Ansari. That dude is strange. Like, who wears a onesie and then pairs it with an Oakland A's cap? But his singing is pretty sick, and I enjoy watching him freakily jump into the crowd for absolutely no reason. Okay, who wrote that?
That was a friend of ours who wrote that.
Okay.
And this was before the A's announced they were moving, by the way, so I feel a little bad. It's an Oakland Ballers cap now, by the way.
Yes. Tark is also an announcer for the Oakland Ballers. We're going to have him on for that.
Go Ballers. Yeah, absolutely. Come to a game. But it's just that kind of is who we are live. Like, Mark is just, he has a guitar. He plays, he sometimes plays guitar notes, sometimes bass. He's a very wide sound. Benham has got a lot of passion in his drumming. Like, you see people fainting at him like he's a Beatle, because he's more than that. And then I just get the craziest outfit possible, and I tend to interact with the crowd a lot because I feel bad for the crowd. They're not on stage like we are, so let's get them involved. And some people, they're not ready for it, but I make them ready for it.
Okay,
and it's always a fun time.
What you mean they're not ready for it? What are y'all doing?
Well, they're looking at me like, this sweaty man who's singing crazily is coming towards me. I mean, you'd be scared. But then they realize they're not scared. They're actually very much turned on to our music. And they're feeling it. And yeah, we love having a great time. And we hope everyone who sees us, feels the same way. And usually they do.
Yes. And you guys recently had your album release party at KLW's downtown San Francisco 220 venue on Montgomery Street, and I heard it went really well. So what's the name?
I heard
y'all had a good time. What's the name behind Electric X?
So Electric from Electric X, the first word comes from a song called Our Friends Electric by Tubeway Army, although it's really Gary Newman. It's one of the most famous synth pop songs. It basically started synth pop in the late 70s. Always loved that song. And then and then X comes from the fact that a lot of music that I've lyrically been inspired by, and I'm sure the other members will say the same thing, has been from our exes. Like, I unfortunately have not a good number of exes, but some breakups that left a mark. But luckily, sometimes good music comes out of that. So Electric X kind of had a ring to it, and we all really liked it. So we went with that.
Yeah, because I picked up on that. About the exes.
How'd you do that?
Well, Tarek, I listened to your album. I was like, okay. And that's why we have clips so the folks at home or on the road or wherever they are can get an idea of some themes in your music. So Damien could play one of the songs from your album Analog Therapy, and the song is called Go Away. What's the inspiration behind that song? I like it because it's upbeat, but the lyrics, it sounds like it's some issues going on here, but it's Electric X, so it's about the X's.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Darden. You are right.
Hey.
I really have always liked songs that had a very happy sound to them, but had such sad lyrics. The Beach Boys, I think, especially Brian Wilson's songs, really hit me like that. And I'm never going to write anything remotely close to what he did. But I went through a really difficult breakup about a year and a half ago. And especially right after, I was just really, really not in a great place. I didn't want to talk to anybody, which is weird because I'm an announcer, so I kind of have to. I didn't want to interact. It was just, I was in a very bad place. And literally what came out was, go away, just leave me be. I think I'm going to have a heart attack, but I want to do it away from everyone. I just want to, it's very, very sad. Like, I want to be alone in the corner and go away from everything that's happening. because the pain of being around people after, you know, something like the way it ended up transfixing the breakup was just too much. So, but yeah, it just, you know, when we were writing the song, the music came first, and then it just like, go away. Just that came naturally. Just the feeling of, you know, it's upbeat, but the reality is much more sadder than that. And, yeah, it's probably the most personal song, I've ever written lyrically. And yeah, it was our lead single. We feel very strong about it. And people, we opened it with at the 220 show, and people were dancing to it like, yeah, man, what a groove. And they're like, oh, did they realize how sad this is? I mean, you know, yeah. Like, yeah, all are depressed. Do, 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 do. But, yeah, we're very all, I think Mark's guitar line and that, and Benham's drums, they just really make that song. They're amazing. So yeah.
So that's the lead single off the album Analog Therapy. What I noticed about that song Go Away is that it's like, you're saying like that, you know, your ex wants you to go away, and then you're kind of telling your ex to go away, and then I feel like you're telling the pain to go away, and you're telling everybody to go away, because you just want to just, we've all had those days where you just want to be under the bed and just, and put the covers on and just let your heart heal. So I hear you on that. Well, I'm glad that you had some Analog Therapy to get you through, which is the name of the album. And it's a combination of 1960s garage rock, 70s new wave, indie rock, electronica, Analog Therapy. So, okay, I get the Electric X. So now we had Analog Therapy. So how does that play into the whole, you know, Electric X?
Well, therapy for, brand. For what you just heard, the therapy part, the lyrics, very, like, all of it was therapy just writing all these songs. And, like, you know, just even being in a band and being able to play with these amazing guys, Mark and Benham, we all write these songs together. And it was therapeutic to just do that, to get my mind off of being so, just so sad, especially early last year. And I'm sorry if you even saw that yourself working at KALW, but I was in a rough place. So that's where the therapy part comes. At Analog, though, we recorded this at Trackworks Studio in South San Francisco with the amazing Rajiv Naidu, former professor at SF State that I had. And we recorded all on tape, literally all of it live in studio on tape. You would probably, the same production value as an album from the mid 70s. Like there were no, like it was all on a tape machine from the early 70s. Wow. And we just like the idea of it's all analog, but it's all also therapy. You put them together and it's like, oh, well this, you know, has a kind of a 70s feel to it too.
Yeah.
So that's how it became Analog Therapy, and very therapeutic, I must say.
Oh, wow. That's cool. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with musician Tarik Ansari. He's the vocalist for the indie rock new wave band Electric X. He also plays the synths, and their new album is Analog Therapy, and it's out now. And Tarik is also an announcer here at KALW. So what was it like recording in the studio onto tape, and then to us as old machines from the 70s? I just feel like the energy in there would have been just really cool.
It was really cool energy. We'd recorded before at like Hyde Street on digital equipment, and even at San Francisco State. But like, you know, so we had been in a studio before, but with tape, I mean, it's not like you can just cut release. You have to like redo the entire take, especially if you're doing the entire thing live. So we've really had to rehearse and rehearse and rehearse. And I will tell you right now, I am the worst musician in the band as far as like playing ability. Mark and Benham, particularly Benham, just maestros. So every single song, I don't know. I mean, actually, I think it's fair to say this. Every single song we rehearsed heavily for, and we did it all, like all the backing tracks in the studio, one take each for each song in one day. So all 10 tracks, we didn't do a second take of any of them because we just, you know, we felt like we got what we wanted live the first time around.
Yeah.
And it was so fun. And it was so cool just going into the control room and hearing that tape sound, that like that little analog grittiness and just like that saturation, the tape saturation when things get really loud.
Yeah.
And I love that. And we decided like, you know what? This is how we want it to sound on Spotify. And that's how it sounds. There's very little done to the recording that we put on that tape that is different online. So what you're hearing is basically a tape. You know, the tape right there.
That's so cool. Yeah, when you're dealing with like cassette tape and film, and you know it's like one take, or you have to do it all over again, it pushes you in a different way. Okay, I want to play another song.
It does.
I like this song from the album, and it's called Hey, and I like it because there's various types of melodies in the song. It almost sounds like three different songs in one, but it's about the same thing. So let's hear Hey. Like the tone changes.
Thank you so much.
It's like, it's like real urgent. Then it's like, hey. But then it's like, hey. Then it's like, hey. And then you go in and out of like the insanity. Like,
yeah.
Of heartache. Yeah, I really like that song. I had a lot of fun listening to that. So tell us about Hey.
Oh, that's about my ex-girlfriend. One person. That same one, yeah.
Okay.
Shout out to Noreen.
Oh my god, you said the name.
Yeah, well, here's the thing.
Okay,
that song was written. We started writing it while I was dating her, and then it kind of got finished when things were starting to break up a bit. That's why the third part of the song, in case people who haven't heard it before, is kind of more like a somber, hey, just give it some time. Let's work this out. And unfortunately it didn't, but we thank her on the liner notes because I mean, for all the unfortunate things that happened with the breakup, like, still a person I care about and we ended up being on good terms after the fact. And she did inspire a lot of the good, maybe sad part of the lyrics on this album. And she's a huge supporter of the band. So shout out to her. And this song is completely, all three parts are like, that passionate feeling, the somber feeling of wishing she was there and that she's not there. Then the kind of the desire that's all just, that song is completely about her. So if she's listening to this now, I think she already knew that, but in case you didn't, guess what? There's a song about you. And this one always kills live because everybody in the audience goes, hey, 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 hey. 220 last week, we had like 75 people there and it was like, nice. Like everybody was getting into it. It was so much fun. So it's always a fun one live.
Nice. And that's actually neat the way you wrote that and the way you guys all wrote it, because it showed, like you said, it shows the trajectory and different stages of your relationship, which makes sense why it sounds like several different songs and the way you sang Hey is different from the beginning than in the middle. Okay, so I knew I was picking up on something. So yes, you guys that was really, really cool. So you guys had, again, your album debut at 220 Montgomery at KLW. You said you had a good turnout. And I read online that you guys are gonna be doing some touring in May. Y'all gonna be touring?
Yes.
Okay, actually, where are you going?
Next week we're starting our West Coast tour. We're hitting up Sacramento on Friday, April 24th. And then we go all the way up to Seattle on Thursday, May 7th. We're down to Portland on Friday, May 8th. We're in Arcata, where Humboldt State is, for those who don't know, Saturday, May 9th. And then we round that out with Richmond in the East Bay at the Planetarium, which is a super sick, almost like Studio 54-esque venue, on Saturday, May 16th. And we're adding more shows in June and July. We're going to get into Oakland and Santa Cruz, San Francisco several times again, and probably LA and San Diego later in the fall. So the West Coast tour is here.
Nice. Is this your first time in a band like this?
To this level, yes. I've been writing songs for like 6 or 7 years, but this is all it's all first time, first time in being a musician on tour. It's a great time.
What is it like, Target? We're gonna wrap up in a minute. What is it like? Because you're on the stage and I'm listening to your songs and you're like, you're crooning, you're yelling. Then then you're softening up your tone. And I know too, you're so animated. You're definitely animated. What is it like being up on that stage singing rock music?
It's a dream come true. I mean, I'm blessed with the band I'm in, with Benham and Mark. I feel like I haven't given them enough credit for just how huge they are. Like, this band would not be what it is, would not be nearly as fun without one of them, or let alone both of them, in this operation. And just being able to play with them, because they're such great people too, just to hang out with outside of music, just the synergy between us, and just being able to like rock out and like be myself, which is kind of crazy, as you know, you've worked with me for years. Porfirio will say the same thing, and so will Damien. Everyone at the studio now is getting a shout out. But just being myself, being able to, like, you know, just give people this, like, total, like, rock vibe that I love and then enjoying it is just such a fun feeling. And I'm addicted to it. And each time we play live, I just get a little dose of how fun it is. And it just, for it to get bigger and bigger, like to have almost 100 people at 220 and getting these big crowds, it just means so much because I have so much fun doing it. And I love that people love it because it's, yeah, it's everything I've always wanted to do my entire life.
Oh, that's wonderful. Tara, congratulations. I'm happy for you because I know we've talked about you doing music. So I'm excited for you.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me on Sights and Sounds. I do want to say real quick before we wrap up, our album is not only available on CD or digital, but it's available on cassette too. You mentioned cassette earlier.
Yeah, I was going to mention
people can
that.
Buy cassettes of album. Yeah.
Okay, people
I
can buy cassettes.
I just wanted
cassette.
To mention that. Yes, and I got one for you.
Tarek, you know, okay, I'm going to get a cassette. You know, we got to go because you work in radio. And, you know, we got to go.
Yeah.
Right. Tarek Ansari is the vocalist for the band Electric X, and their new album, Analog Therapy, is out now. Next up, a feel-good musical that takes place in a unique Canadian town right after 9/11. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. This year marks the 25th anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. And those of us who are old enough remember where we were on that horrific, somber day. And it was an unforgettable time for many people who found themselves stuck in the small Canadian town of Gander on the island of Newfoundland. About 7,000 airplane passengers from around the world were grounded in Gander because U.S. airspace was closed, which was more than half of Gander's population at the time. But the people of Gander welcomed those passengers into their town with many acts of kindness, and there was some headbutting too. This all inspired the musical Come From Away, and the show was over a decade old and had a run on Broadway, but you can see it now at the Mountain View Center for the Performing Arts. Robert Kelly is the musical's director and founder of the company Theater Works, which is putting on the show. Here's our conversation. Robert Kelly, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, nice to talk to you too. And I understand you prefer to be called Kelly, so I will call you Kelly for the interview.
Thanks.
Yeah, Kelly, this year marks the 25th anniversary of 9/11.
I know. It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is. And I know that was a moment in history where if you were alive at that time, you remember where you were and what you were doing.
It was a shock for everyone. It changed everything.
Yeah, it did. I feel like the country has not been the same since. That's in my opinion.
I think that's pretty true.
Yeah. But this musical, Come From Away, is an uplifting story. And it's something that you've wanted to direct for a long time. What was it about this, or what is it about this production that captivates you?
Well, it deals with events that happened after the 9/11 tragedy and shows, which certainly showed humanity at its worst. And this play shows humanity at its best. And that contrast has stuck with me from the moment I saw it and has made it a sort of life-changing experience for me. And one I think will be life-changing for people in the audience as well.
And I understand Come From Away, that's a term that means someone who isn't from Newfoundland.
Yeah.
And tell us about the show's creators. Is it David Hine and Irene Sankoff?
Yes.
Yeah, tell us about them.
They were two very young composers back in 2013 when I first saw a reading of the show at a New Works Festival in New York. And they had a little baby in a carriage along with them while the show was being performed for a group of producers from all over the country and New York, Broadway, all kinds of people. And since then, the show, of course, went on to great fame, both in America and around the world. And since then, we've gotten to know them as a company, Theater Works has, because they've come to our New Works Festival quite a few times, bringing some of their newer pieces and pieces that they're in development on to our New Works stage. And we hope we'll see them many more times in the future. But it's been fun getting to know them and appreciating their desire to keep making wonderful art and also to watch the progress of their daughter as she grew up in that time span as well. These are two really great people, as well as genius musicians and writers. And they really did find the truth of what happened in Gander, Newfoundland on 5 days following the disaster of 9/11. And I think the fact that they were even drawn to this material and to the immense sense of community and togetherness that this community of Gander created and offered to strangers from all over the world reflects the kind of people that David and Irene really are.
And they're both Canadian, right?
Yes.
Yes, yes. Okay, so let's, you know, talk more about this, just the plot of this play. So it was 9/11 happened, and U.S. airspace was closed for 5 days, and about 7,000 air travelers were stranded in Gander, Newfoundland, and which is a lot for a town that has 10,000 people. So to add an extra 7,000 people, you know, there. But this is a special town. So tell us about Gander.
Well, it's one of the largest cities in Newfoundland, which is, has a lot of very small towns. Some of them actually surround Gander. But it also happens to have one of the largest airports in the world. When it was first built, it was the largest and was used during World War II to allow airplanes to get across the ocean, and but had a refueling spot there. And the airport was still used, but little used compared to the past. But the size of the airport made it the right place for all of these airplanes coming from, especially from Europe, from the east, coming west towards the United States to land there. And there were, I think, 38 planes, and these are all jumbo jets that landed in this little tiny space, this tiny town with a big airport, with no idea of what to do or what was going to happen or how long they would be there. And the citizens of Gander, who are, you know, nice, normal, so to speak, ordinary folks with big hearts and a huge amount of joy, came together along with folks from surrounding communities to house the come from a ways, the people from the plains. They called them the plain people at the time, and to feed them and provide them with changes of clothes and showers in their homes, transportation around the area, in a remarkable show of humanity and joy and love for your fellow person. That's Gander. It seems like a normal, ordinary place until you realize it's one of the most extraordinary places any of us could imagine.
And I was reading on the 9/11 Memorial Museum website, and you kind of spoke on this too, as far as how did they take care of the travelers who were stranded. And on the website, the 9/11 Memorial website, it says they organized tours of the town, bowling matches, concerts by local bands. They introduced visitors to regional cuisine like stewed moose.
Yeah. That was one of the joys of our props department, was creating some of these dishes that are
Really? Oh, wow.
We don't eat anything live in the show, but that's the look of some of these things.
Yeah, but still, yeah, just to reimagine that. Okay, I love some of the terms they use. I was looking on the website, so they'll say, God love your cotton socks, which means thank you. And these are some of my favorites. And who knit you, which is who are your parents. I just like some of the lingo that they use. So, okay, so how is the story told in this play? Is it told through the eyes of one person, a number of people? Yeah, like, what's the setup here?
It's a very interesting script in that regard, and extremely challenging for the actors. But the story is told from basically two different points of view, from the citizens of Gander, and there are 12 actors who play them, but also from the point of view of the passengers on the planes, the come from a ways, the plane people. And they play those characters as well, often back and forth in a big hurry. And you get a lot of different scenes and different looks and different flavors and feelings, all out of the same 12 brilliant actors. And we really do have a brilliant cast in this show. Plus, they have to have beautiful voices, and they all do. So that's part of it as well. It's told both in song and in dialogue, of course.
Well, speaking of song, I want people to hear a snippet of the musical soundtrack just to get an idea of the production sound. And so this is from the Broadway musical soundtrack. And so Newfoundland is nicknamed The Rock. And so here's a snippet of the song, Welcome to the Rock, which is composed by the show's creators, David Hine and Irene Sankoff.
Welcome to the wildest weather that you've ever heard of,
where everyone is nicer, but it's never nice above.
Welcome to the farthest place you'll get from Disneyland.
Fish and chips and shipwrecks.
This is Newfoundland.
Welcome to the Rock, an islander.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Robert Kelly, or Kelly, director of the musical Come From Away. It's about thousands of travelers who were stranded for several days following 9/11 in the small Canadian town Gander, which is on the island of Newfoundland. But the people of Gander treated the travelers with care and kindness, and the musical is running now until May 10th at the Mountain View Center for the Performing Arts. So, Kelly, you know, we hear about this the joy and the compassion in the play, but there's also tension too, right? Because I was reading about, I have not seen the musical, and I was reading about how one of the characters who was Muslim was detained, you know, at the time. So what was, and it's different cultures coming in from all over the world to this small town. So talk about some of the tensions that the characters, without spoiling, of course, but talk about some of the tensions that the characters experience in this show.
There's a lot of references to the kinds of prejudice and the tension that we still experience today. There's Islamophobia. There's a gay couple who's afraid of us being in a town where they don't know what the tenor of the town actually is. There's African-American character who is worried about the, you know, his own protection and his own safety because he's come from an environment where he didn't feel that safe. And a whole lot of the issues of our world today are involved in the show, while not being the main point of the show or anything, but still definitely dealt with. But I think the strongest one is Islamophobia and the way that people reacted in the face of the 9/11 tragedy. And I think it's dealt with strongly, but beautifully and honestly. Certainly a challenge for the actors, who are all deeply friends and care about each other, to play anything that's like that in on stage, but they're carrying it off. And I feel that we learn as well as love as the play progresses.
And so the musical, it opened on Broadway in 2017, and again, it was in the works long before that, and it toured. You mentioned it came to San Francisco some years ago. But now, again, you guys are doing it at the Mountain View Center for the Performing Arts. So are you taking a different approach when it comes to directing and telling this story? Anything different that you all are doing?
Well, the basic challenge of the play from a directing and design point of view is pretty much similar in that there really are just 12 chairs used in the show. A few tables. We are doing it with a set that has platform system that's quite different from the Broadway production or the touring production, but also gives us some opportunities to try things that that they did not do. Of course, the ultimate challenge is, because there's a lot of transportation in the involved in the show, is how do you create an airplane on stage with, full of people? How do you create a bus on stage full of people? As it's turned out in our production, we have three different versions of an airplane. We have four different versions of a bus. And our poor actors, thank them. They have to create all these things in the course of the play while still performing and singing and being all these wonderfully believable characters.
Wow. We're living in such tense and divisive times. And this play is a reminder of just being kind. Yeah. What do you hope people get out of this production?
When I first saw it, I didn't know what it was about. I didn't know what it was going to be. After the first 5 minutes of watching it as in a reading, just with, you know, microphones and music stands, I realized that I was in tears. And it was about the underlying humanity of this show. And it lingered all the way through that presentation. That was in 2013, before it became a big hit or anything. I felt that it changed me. It made me want to be a better person. And that has stuck with me. And I feel that that is one of the things this play offers all of us. It's something you can get out of the play just by being there. It can change you. It can change your life. There's a line towards the end of the show where one of the characters has returned from this experience in Gander. And he talks about it this way. He says, "My dad asks, were you okay out where you were stranded? How do I tell him that I wasn't just okay? I was so much better." Still gets me. That's what this play has to offer.
You know, you encounter good art when you feel changed by it. So
it's such a great opportunity to bring it to Theater Works. This is the first version of the show that's been produced locally. And we are extremely proud to be bringing it to not just the peninsula where our theater is located, but to the whole Bay Area. We hope people from all over will come from away to the Mountain View Center to see the show.
Kelly, thank you so much. It was nice talking to you. Thank you. Have a good run with the show.
Thanks a lot. Thank you so much.
That was theater director Robert Kelly. The musical Come From Away is running now until May 10th at the Mountain View Center for the Performing Arts. And that's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, and board operator, Damian Miner. And thank you for tuning in. Be good to yourselves and each other.